that's what we're going to be talking about as we begin the hour with Stroman on Sports, joined now in the studio by Dr. Debbie Stroman, who is an athlete in her own right, longtime sports commentator, expert on analytics, all things on and off the court and the field, and here in the studio today. So thank you for joining us again for the second day in a row to talk about another significant issue.
Yes, and we also talk about how sports reflects society.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another example where clearly you can just point to the tragic incident and go there. But I think, as we've discussed already, it's bigger than that. And now we're talking about leadership again, very much related to what is going on with Silent Sam in terms of our leadership on campus, in terms of leadership in the state. Politicians, community leaders, everybody's trying to figure out the leadership side of this. And this is a case at the University of Maryland where a lot of fingers are being pointed in terms of the leadership and what they're doing or not doing.
So I gave the 10 second summary of what's been going on in Maryland, but you've been following this really closely. So fill people in, what's been going on?
Well, certainly it's a very, very heated situation. And gosh, I hate to even say, pun intended, but the president of University of Maryland, Wallace Lowe, he has come out and a number of positive things that he did. First off, he apologized. And you don't hear that a lot from university leadership. And I think that is definitely because of the economics by him apologizing. But he said that they failed miserably. Everything from not taking his temperature to not immediately immersing his body in cold ice water. So for him to state that, that is an example of what we should do. The other thing is the Board of Regents, another level of leadership, has come in and said that it's important for us to do a broader investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are lots of critics out there. Everything from it's very scary and it raises suspicion when you have an institution investigating itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've learned our lessons around that here at Chapel Hill. I think also President Wallace, he said that as a president, he has what's called dormant volcanoes on his campus. And I love that language. And particularly, he raised up athletics.
Mm-hmm.
So you know you have all this branding, all of these championships, the energy that's created by having athletics. But once that volcano goes off, it can be very, very bad for your university's reputation and funding.
Yeah. So the immediate kind of controversy started with Jordan McNair and his death. And as you mentioned, just a whole series of breakdowns in what should have happened and what wasn't happened, what didn't happen. And then this leads now in the last couple of weeks to, it wasn't just this one situation. This is the one situation that tragically led to a death, but this is a symbol or an illustration of a much, much larger culture of not really caring about injuries, not really caring about players' health, urging players to push through even threatening, life-threatening injuries. And that raises the larger question, too, to the extent that that's true, of is DJ Durkin and the Maryland program an outlier, or is this a symptom of just the way that college football works in a larger scale?
Well, most would say Maryland is not an outlier.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of my friends, Dr. Kristen Kucera, is now the director of the National Center for Catastrophic Sport, and is right here at UNC. And I was very blessed to have been to have studied under Dr. Fred Mueller, who started the center back in 1982, built off the work of Dr. Carl Blythe, who also had as a professor. But they track these types of fatalities and sport-related illnesses. And it's been stated, their research shows that there's basically three a year, and most of them happen in high school. But the bigger picture of what happens and what creates this, number one, I would say commercialization and pressure. He is a first-year head coach. He's on leave now. But also, there have been allegations, and some that are very first person, as in people who've experienced it, said he has bullying tactics, his staff, intimidation, denigration. And of course, what happened in terms of what President Lowe said, that they failed miserably in the sense that they weren't using the technology that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of institutions around safety who say that we need to have heat monitors. We need to have a cold bath ready. And proudly, the state of North Carolina is one of the leaders in that it's required for our high schools as well. But there is no doubt that pressure to win is really, really making people do things that seem like you don't really care about the athlete.
So what are the barriers to putting reforms in place? Like what needs to be brought down in order to get people to the point where they can do this?
Well, you would think death would be enough.
Yeah.
But the dollars, when we look at an athletic budget and we look at how it's carved up within football, we know, especially Division I, your top 30 programs, not only are the coaches making millions of dollars, but now offensive and defensive coordinators can make up to $1 million. Most of them may make at least $500,000 to $600,000. And then you think about all the support staff, and many of these programs do look like professional NFL franchises when you have just so many, what the young people say are suits. People who have these administrative positions and they're paid six figures, and then you think about what the athlete is not getting. So yes, it's pretty nice to walk into a college football office and you've got marble floors and you've got cherry wood desks and you've got, you know, state-of-the-art, you know, technological photos where you could see the sweat, you know, down to the highlight of the sweat bubble and all of that. And that looks great and it feels good. The air conditioning, you get nice lunches and everything. But where is that money in terms of the medical program, in terms of the athletic program, in terms of nutrition and sleep? That's where we need to see more of a balance of the dollars.
And in terms of tying the pressure to the role and the prevalence of money in college sports, we've already been talking at length about how much more prevalent and insidious the role of money is. So that would suggest that this problem either is or has the potential to get worse, not better. Right?
Well, absolutely. In fact, I was reading about the climate change, and in particular in the South, how it's only going to get hotter and more humid. And so we really need to listen to the scientists and the medical professionals who are saying we need to implement other things. Another point is that in the United States, we don't have, or I'll say in the NCAA, we don't have a strong certification for coaching in itself. Now, there is a test that you have to take for recruiting roles, but you would think that you would have to have some type of certification to be able to work with young people. And it's one thing to be able to do the technical skills, making sure you tackle properly or making sure that, you know, you throw the ball a certain way and don't, you know, tear up your shoulder in baseball. But the mental coaching that needs to be done, being concerned about relationships between your staff and athletes, because we're hearing more about sexual assaults and things. So there's a lot of abuse that I think that we could, at the very least, create more awareness about if we had some type of minimal licensure or coaching certification.
Speaking with Dr. Debbie Strohman, again, we're talking about the allegations surrounding the University of Maryland and their college football program, but this is a question that goes far, far beyond Maryland and also beyond college football. I mean, you started by talking about this as a breakdown of leadership, and that's something that we see on a regular basis. And another issue that seems to be, if not getting worse, at least not getting better, the extent to which you have people in positions of leadership, positions of authority, positions of moral authority, in addition to just legal or official authority, who are just abrogating their responsibility as leaders to do the right thing.
Well, it's about trust. Mm-hmm. And so who does the athlete trust? Who do the parents trust? And this goes back to leadership not being connected to what's going on in the ground. And again, I'm not trying to be despairing around leaders, but far too often they stay in their offices or they have one or two people who are supposed to get the scoop, but those people aren't trusted in the community. When I say community, that might be the local community, it might be the athletic community, it might be where students are, whatever, as in they don't know the pulse and they don't know how much passion is really around a particular subject. And they certainly don't seem to understand when people are really hurt to the extent that they will do things like take down a statue because they're so far removed. There's a lack of trust there. And so you have a situation with athletics where the athletes are sometimes fearful to speak up for various reasons. They feel someone will, you know, hurt their athletic future. We have the parents who don't necessarily question. And when they do question, they're kind of put in the box of, you know, you're a parent who's asking too much. And so Then you have faculty. For whatever reason, they might be disengaged. They feel disempowered. Why bother? The athletic machine is like a big mammoth monster. There's no way my voice will make a difference. And so I will summarize this by saying that that's why the media is important, because you all have the right.
You're important. This is why I like talking to you.
It's the media. It's so, so important that the media stays on top of the stories. Even if they're considered the villain or the enemy or whatever, the media is crucial in things like this, because more often than not, it's that profession that stays close to the community.
So we got to wrap up in a second, but oftentimes when you have people launching, levying really strong criticisms like this against college football, a lot of times it's either in the context or it's perceived to be in the context of that person doesn't like college football in general. They don't think it's important. They don't care about it. Oftentimes the person who is making those criticisms is saying, I don't care about college football. You're here in the studio with me. People can't see this because it's on the radio. You are an athlete. You're wearing a football shirt. You care about college football. You like it. You want it to survive. So how does it survive? How does it get better? How does it improve? What's the final takeaway?
Well, we have to continue to shine the light on it. Mm-hmm. It is an institution, so that means it comes with all those things that institutions struggle with. Change, evolution. Trying to be innovative. And so you have to have people who do care about the sport, but care enough to criticize it, as James Baldwin says. You have to be a listener, and sometimes you have to get out of the way. Like if you eat, sleep, and drink football, as in you're a part of that institution or that system, you're the one who needs to back up and just listen to people. Because the other side is that it's going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are other sports that used to be in the forefront, like boxing. And then it disappeared. Now, we've had certain athletes that have brought it back, and you know, all of a sudden we're watching again. But in general, there's a sense that this sport does not have to last forever. It's the people that decide. And if we don't make changes, we could see an evolution, as in towards its death.
Leave it there. Dr. Debbie Strowman, thank you so much, as always.
Thank you.